Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today. Unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. Here's something that many of you guys don't know about me, and that's in 2008, I didn't vote for the Libertarian candidate. I voted for Barack Obama, and I voted for him for the same reason that so many people did at the time. One, he is extremely charismatic. He's an incredible speaker. He's dynamic. He's exciting. The other reason was that I saw somebody who spoke honestly. He spoke my language. He said, where Bill Clinton has said, yeah, you know, I smoked marijuana, but I didn't inhale, in a way that everyone knew he was lying. Instead of just saying stuff like that, he said, yeah, I smoked marijuana, I did inhale, that was the whole point. That was something that said to me at the time, I was a little bit more politically naive, that here was somebody who was going to end the war on drugs. Here was somebody who'd spoken so boldly in the Senate against the Iraq and Afghan wars. Here's somebody who's going to bring the troops home. Here's somebody who's going to put a stop to the horror of Guantanamo because he'd spoken so much against the horrors of Guantanamo. And I trusted that he was going to do that. And I really believed that he would. And so 2008, for the first time in my life, I voted for a non-libertarian presidential candidate. I did that because I believed then, as I believe now, I still believe this, that the person that you're voting for, the principles of the person that you're voting for, are more important than the political party. But after a couple of years of Obama being in office, things had changed. I'd gotten very involved. He'd essentially pushed me right back to the Libertarian Party, and I was back with a vengeance. You know, where before I'd been kind of a passive Libertarian, now I was an active Libertarian. I was getting involved. I ran for office. I volunteered at God knows how many different booths. I did all kinds of other activism. I did activism on social media and farmers markets, whatever, all that kind of stuff. But the fact is, while a lot of us got kind of woken up by this shock that this was the last, if anyone could change the status quo, it was going to be Obama. We saw that he wasn't going to do it. And so we realized we had to do it ourselves. But the thing is, a lot of people haven't seen that yet. People haven't seen that for the same reason that I broke ranks with the Libertarian Party in 2008. It's because he's a charismatic guy. He's likable. He's an amazing speaker. He does great interviews. He connects. He's a great, you know what Obama is? He's a great actor. He's one of those actors where at the end of the movie that you watch, you're saying, wow, that was such a great performance. I need to applaud. And that's exactly what people are planning to do here in D.C., here where I live, in a day after tomorrow. But here's the thing. If you're actually planning to applaud for Obama, there's some things that you need to keep in mind. You need to put some of this in perspective. Because the fact is, Obama, I'm not saying he didn't do the things I wanted him to do. Because listen, Obama is kind of like a very far left Democrat. I'm a libertarian. Fine, we're going to have different views. I get that. But I'm going to talk about the ways in which he didn't even maintain his own party platform. He didn't even do the Democrat things that were popular. I want to put in a little perspective. All right. If you clap, so Obama promised he was going to bring the troops home, did not. In fact, he continued the war. People in the war, active duty, are getting more and more disenfranchised to the point where where the actual military suicide rate for the first time in decades, has gone above the civilian suicide rate. If you clap for 1 second, for every active military, I'm not talking about veterans. I'm talking about people who are deployed under Obama, people who had Obama as their commander-in-chief, not Bush as their commander-in-chief or Clinton or anybody. Current active military, if you clap 1 second for every active military suicide, just 1 second, you're going to have to clap for over half an hour. You're going to have to clap for over half an hour if you just assign 1 second for one active duty military suicide. not even talking about the deaths, just the suicides of people who become so disillusioned over there with this idiotic police action or military overreach or nation building or whatever you want to call it, 30 minutes. Now, if you clap for just 1 second for every bomb dropped in 2016 alone, just 2016, not 2008 to 2020, just in 1 year, you got to plan to clap for over 7 hours straight. If you clap for, and remember, this is a Democrat who, while in the Senate, claimed to be anti-war, who was elected on an anti-war platform, who said he was going to stop this horror, for just the 2016 bombs, 7 hours straight if it's 1 second per bomb. If you clap for 1 second per person that Obama has refused to pardon for victimless drug crimes, these are people who are in prison where their worst thing that they've done is drugs. That's the worst thing. Now, there are people who've done drugs and robbery. I'm not talking about those guys. I'm talking about the people who just did drugs, just had drug crimes, nothing else. If you clap 1 second per person for the people that Obama refused to pardon for that, you would need to applaud for over 2 days. Now, it's not all about numbers. It's not just about numbers, because sometimes a small number of things can be equally tragic. You would need only one heartbreaking minute for those still detained in the Guantanamo torture prison, which Obama said he was going to shut down. That was one of his major selling points, and he has not yet shut it down. It's only 50 or so people are there right now, detained without trial. Only 55. It's no big deal. Now, if you look at some of the other areas, what about the Patriot Act? Privacy rights. I mean, those are not, you know, only libertarian things or Republican things. Those are things that many Democrats, most Democrats believe. The ACLU fights in favor of. If you clap for 1 second for the number of times the Patriot Act was used just for drugs and nonsense like that, just for drugs and just other just non-crimes, for just 1 year of that, you need to clap for an hour. But if you clap one time for every time the Patriot Act was used for anything even like indirectly, potentially, maybe related to terrorism, 30 seconds. That would get you done. In other words, it's used 100 times as often for drugs and nonsense. You know, the type of drugs that Obama, to his credit, admitted to doing. He was frank and open about that, but he hasn't let up. That's what the Patriot Act is being used for under Obama, not under Bush. Although I'm sure it was just as bad under Bush. Let's talk about the money. If you want to clap for 1 second for every dollar of new debt caused by Obama's waste, war, and welfare, you're going to have to clap for 200,000 years. Now, if we switch that around, let's turn that around a little bit. Let's turn that backwards. Libertarian policy, you can clap for 2 days for these harmless non-criminals rejoining their families. That means instead of having fathers and mothers locked up away from their kids, these families are coming together, having the people who care about the kids back in their lives. You'd clap for over 3 days. Under libertarian policies, you would be clapping for 3 days straight for the troops rejoining their families. A few hours for the tax reduction per person. Several days for those who could now legitimately afford lower cost health care. A few more days for those who could choose education that worked for their kids. And to put the icing on the cake, just a few minutes for the now unemployed bureaucrats who would no longer be able to get in the way of progress. Now, that's the real difference between Obama's legacy and what the Libertarian Party, what Libertarian presidents, whether it's Gary Johnson or all the other great presidents we've had, you know, Ron Paul in the past, Harry Brown, another great example. Those are the people who could have given us that. Think about that. Think about saving money. Think about bringing so many troops home. Think about reconnecting all these families. See, that's what this is about. You know, a lot of folks will say, you know, libertarianism is just about lower taxes. And the fact is, you can talk to libertarians, all these libertarians that I work with, we're all volunteers. If you get paid a libertarian for, you know, let's say some kind of just like the minimum, the lowest legal wage for the amount of work that they do, I guarantee you that's going to be much, much more than anything that any of us pay in taxes. This isn't about tax. I mean, it's about taxes, but it's also about freedom. It's not just about our taxes. It's about, you know, our family's taxes, our friends' taxes, perfect strangers' taxes, our freedom, our friends' freedom, perfect strangers' freedoms. That's the idea of the Libertarian Party. It's not just if my goal was just to have more freedom for myself, believe me, I could get that in about 1/100th the amount of time that I and 1/100th the amount of effort too that goes into libertarian activism. And a lot of you have that same mindset. I know a lot of you have that same mindset. You're saying, listen, I'm not gonna put in, you know, 10, 20, 30 hours of volunteer time per week just so I can reduce my taxes a few percent. That doesn't make economic sense for me. And that's the point. It's not really an economic thing. It's an ethical thing. It's a moral thing. It's a political thing. A lot of you are thinking, how can I do that? What can I change? How can I make this a reality? How can I actually put this feeling that I have that I want to fight for the freedom of other people, that I want to fight for the benefit of other people, and I want to make it not just a belief, but I want to turn that into an action. I want those actions to speak louder than any words or beliefs. What can I do? The most important thing you can do is run for office. And I know a lot of you guys are saying, well, I'm not a political science major and I'm not a lawyer. So what? Neither am I. You don't need to be any of those things. You need to be willing to learn a few things, and your state party folks will definitely be happy to teach that to you. You need to be willing to fill out a few questionnaires, go to some candidate forums, and you need to be willing to listen. And it's an amazing learning experience. It's one of the best things that I've ever done. The people I talk to every week, either on this show or out in the world, they all say the same thing. That is one of the best things they've ever done. I've yet to meet a single person who ran for office and then didn't run for office again because they liked it so much. And you'll notice that a lot of people, you know, that's how you know it's a good idea. It's not that somebody does it once, because you can get somebody to do anything once. The fact that so many of us do it 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times, because it is that an amazing experience. Now, if you want to make some of that happen, find out how to get involved. Go to lp.org. All the information you need is right there. Get involved with your state party. Contact your state chair. See how you can get involved in either social media, if that's your direction, or state fairs or farmers markets or going door to door, whatever type of person, whatever you like to do, there's going to be something for you. But again, that address is lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Have you found the beauty inside of you? Join Bonnie Bonadeo each week for Beauty Inside and Out. We'll explain how beauty plays a part in everybody's lives. Our guests are makeup artists, hairdressers, and doctors. But we'll also feature holistic and wellness specialists and spiritual advisors. You can find that beauty inside and express it to its fullest on the outside. Tune in to Beauty Inside and Out every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Why do some people seemingly make the same mistakes when it comes to love and relationships? What is the best way to find love? Make a visit each week to Destination Love. Host Shelley Pumphrey will bring what you need to know to find love. No, it's not about the next fad, dating site tips, scoring the first date, or looking your best. Rather, it's empowerment, knowing that your authentic self works best and the science behind finding love. Destination Love is live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern on Voice America Variety. Hoarding has become a tremendous issue worldwide, not just for those who hoard, but for the people who love and care about them. On Take Back Your Life, When Your Things Are Taking Over, host Elaine Birchall helps you to understand and get unstuck from the clutter in your life, no matter how severe. Our program brings you practical strategies to help you get started and maintain your goals. Listen live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. One of the interesting questions that we hear a lot is, if drugs are legalized, I mean, if all drugs are legalized, recreational marijuana, recreational heroin, everything's legalized, what's going to discourage people from using drugs? In other words, why wouldn't people use drugs? Well, I'll tell you exactly what's going to make people not use drugs. Free markets is going to make people not use drugs. Right now, at this very moment, in many cities, if you're a young man or honestly, or a young woman with who's pretty strong, you can be basically guaranteed a job if you just abstain from marijuana use. If you abstain from drug use, guaranteed a job. There's an article in the New York Times that says that right now, many places, many businesses that work with heavy machinery can't find enough people who can pass a drug test. There's not enough people who can pass a drug test. Now, the reason that they test for drugs is because since they're dealing with very heavy machinery, they have to pay insurance. Insurance on that kind of stuff is pretty expensive because people can injure themselves or they can, use a wrecking ball and hit the wrong building or all kinds of things. So because of that, the insurance is pretty expensive. But your insurance is a lot lower if you hire people, if you have a drug-free workplace, if you have a guaranteed drug-free workplace, insurance companies charge less. So there's a huge free market incentive for businesses to hire people who abstain from drug use. And that means right now there's a huge advantage to abstaining from drug use. It's a guaranteed job. Now, a lot of folks ask, well, why isn't that working better? I mean, because it's not just heavy machinery. Hospitals have these same policies. A lot of places where insurance is an expensive part of the whole process, that's part of their agreement with the insurance companies, that they're going to have a drug-free workplace with random testing and all that stuff. So that if you are a non-drug user, you have a huge economic advantage. But why isn't that working? Why isn't it working as well as it might? Well, it's working a little bit, don't get me wrong. But it's not working as well as it might. Well, here's the problem. Right now, the difference between working and not working just isn't that big. Right now, you got welfare, you have unemployment insurance, food stamps, you have all kinds of things. So even if you don't work, it's not horrible. It's not unbearable. But let me give you a theoretical situation. Let's say that a young man has an option between giving up marijuana and giving up food, because if he doesn't stop using marijuana, he's not going to have any access to food. He's not going to have any money. So his choices are marijuana or food. He can get high and starve to death, or not get high and not starve to death. Pretty much most people are going to go with the food over the marijuana. You're not going to see a lot of people preferring marijuana to work if there's no welfare. Now, if there is welfare and the difference between getting a job and getting welfare is just a few dollars a week, well, yeah, it's about not, no one's going to really adjust their behavior for something like that. Now, that's one way that the free market addresses some of these, but it's not the only way. In a lot of jobs, sobriety just gives you an edge. It just gives you a regular edge. I mean, when your brain is focused, clear, and uncompromised, you just have an edge. It doesn't apply to every job. In some jobs, it doesn't make any difference. Not all jobs push your brain to its absolute physical limit. But if in a job that does, it gives you an edge. Now, some people say, well, what about people who are just as high functioning when they're recreational users as other people who are not? People who handle their lives just fine on drugs, there's no pressure on them. Yeah, but there doesn't need to be. People who can use recreational drugs and it doesn't affect their lives, there's no need to lock them up. They're not the problem.
They're not any problem. They're living lives. They're being productive. They're specifically the not problem at all. So yeah, there's not really going to be a lot of economic pressure on those specific people, but there doesn't need to be any economic pressure on those specific people at all. Now, of course, quite a few people are pointing out that there's also personal choice. I mean, tobacco is perfectly legal. Yeah, there's no law against tobacco, yet many people choose not to smoke. There's no law against alcohol, yet many people choose not to drink. People have all kinds of personal reasons to do something or not do something. We're getting a couple questions coming in. Eduardo asks, do libertarians really want to cut out all social insurance programs? That's an interesting question, and I want to answer it as precisely as I can. There's a difference in, for example, transportation between mass transportation and public mass transportation. In America, you mostly see most of the time when you're looking at a local bus, it's usually a government-run bus. Our buses between cities tend to be private. But there's not usually, and at least in most American cities, not usually a lot of private bus companies that run locally. But in many other countries, there are. I mean, there's no reason why a bus can't be run privately or publicly. I mean, you pick up somebody, they give you some money, drive them on. That's a pretty straightforward business model. So the point is, you can have mass transportation, for example, a bus, but still not have any public transportation. And so do libertarians want to cut out all social insurance programs? We just want to get government out of the business of social insurance. There are plenty of private social insurance programs. There are plenty of private personal insurance programs. There's plenty of private disability insurance. I mean, for example, one of my good friends is a spine surgeon. He has insurance because he knows that if he cuts his hand or something like that, or is in traffic, or for some reason he can't use his hands, then he's going to, you need your hands as a surgeon, pretty much. So athletes have the same thing where they have insurance. So we don't think the government should provide disability insurance, but that doesn't mean we don't think that there should be no disability insurance. We just believe that private disability insurance has a lot of advantages. The biggest advantage is this. When you buy private disability insurance, guess where that money goes? It goes into the account of the insurer. It goes into the pension account. If you have an agreement such that that money can be invested or something like that, maybe it's invested, but usually it's just there collecting interest. On the other hand, look at what happens with a public-run disability insurance program. A public-run disability insurance program like Social Security, that gets raided all the time. The government goes and uses that money for war. They use that money for some stupid project. They use that money for whatever nonsense they want to. Private disability insurers don't do that. They don't say, yeah, listen, you give us your insurance premiums, we're going to go bomb some hospitals, and then also maybe we'll give you some portion of what we said we'll give you and maybe not. Because that's what Social Security's been doing right now. You've been giving your money to the government, they've been wasting it on insane stuff, and giving you back less than what you anticipate. That's what's happening right now. So for that reason, we don't believe in public disability insurance. Same thing when it comes to retirement. We believe in retirement insurance or having a right retirement fund or any of those things. We just don't believe it should be handled, and by handled I basically mean mismanaged, by the government. We don't want the people who can't do their job right to handle that. What gets tricky is when we start talking about things like, we have social welfare, food stamps, all that. Because we want to say, well, is that something that the free market would provide? And the free market is people say, well, that's free market is entirely built on greed. No, that's not really true. And the evidence is right now, there are many, many people who are trying to help the poor, who are trying to help the homeless, who are trying to do all these things. And guess who's getting in their way? Guess who's stopping them? The government is literally stopping people from being decent to other people. You have churches that aren't allowed to let homeless people stay there. They're saying, like, listen, you're homeless, you're on the street. We're following the laws of God, and the laws of God tell us that don't leave people sleeping on the street. Please come inside. They're getting fined. They're getting shut down. They're saying the government's saying you can't do that. You have in New York, you know, a lot of, there used to be a tradition, you know, Jewish grandmothers would get together, make all these bagels, give them to the homeless, because they're saying our culture or religion tells us that we should share food. We should give food to other people who need it. Again, government steps in and says you can't do that. Las Vegas, you have all these casinos. They say, listen, at the end of the night, we have a ton of extra food in our buffets. Let's give it to the homeless because, you know, we've had so much bounty. We're so grateful for it. We want to share that with people who have nothing. Guess what? Once again, government steps in and says, no, you can't do that. Hunters for the homeless. That's a group of hunters who would just say, listen, we love to hunt and we know people need food and let's hunt and bring food to the homeless. They go out, they hunt all this deer, they pack it up, you know, and these are experts. I mean, they know how to, you know, to handle all the butchering and all that kind of stuff. And again, who stops it? They do all this work, they set it, they have it already. Again, government steps in, destroys the meat, takes it away from the homeless. So you don't pass a law against something unless you think that somebody's going to do it. The fact that there are all these laws against charity is just there to feed into that narrative that says that people don't want to help other people, because they know that if people start helping other people, then people will kind of see that there's a lie. They'll see that this ridiculous idea that we need to have government doing charity, they're going to see that it's false. They're going to be able to see it with their eyes. So essentially, charity is at this point a threat to the government narrative. If you want to really help, you know, really change things, in addition to running for office, what's another way? Any charity. Get involved with the charity. Show that we don't need government to do this poorly. We can do it well. Just like we don't need government running public schools poorly, we can run private schools well. Just like we don't need the government running Social Security poorly, we can run private retirement well. And show them we don't need the government to run charity poorly. Instead, we'd much, much rather run it well. And if you want to help get rid of some of those laws, if you want to get rid of those laws that say, listen, you cannot help the homeless, you cannot help the poor, you cannot house people in a church, you know, you're above a certain number of people, if you're ready to make that happen, go to lp.org. Let's get involved and let's shut down some of these ridiculous laws. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
We know that you're looking for more. You want a more fulfilling life and don't know how to free yourself from the proverbial rut. Tune in to Wake Up and Listen with co-hosts Don Burnett and Dr. Don. With engaging discussion and some fun too, Don and Dr. Don will help you bring harmony into your life, improve your relationships, release those fears, and get you unstuck. Wake Up and Listen can be heard live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Are you a pet parent? If so, you'll want to stay up to date on the latest tech gadgets and advances for your canine or feline friend. With a ton of apps, websites, tech toys, and more, you'll want to be in the know when it comes to the real treasures and the duds. For that information, listen for Pet Lover Geek with host Lorian Clemens. We test and discuss what's hot and what's not on the pet front, so you'll be better informed. Tune in Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
What makes a great leader? Most have a vision, one that starts beyond the resources available and continues from that point into developing a solid plan, organization, and company. Leadership issues are discussed each week on Voltcast, Illuminating Leadership with host Jeff Smith. Jeff has years of experience as a leader and executive coach, and his guests will bring you information that can help a team of any size. Listen every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Thank you.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. I want to talk about some of the picks that Trump has, and specifically I want to talk about Jeff Sessions. I want to talk about this idea that he has that the federal government has any business prosecuting marijuana laws, continuing the federal war on drugs in states where recreational marijuana has been legalized. He's said that if Congress wants him to do something different, that they should change the marijuana laws. But that if they do not change the marijuana laws, he has every intention of continuing the marijuana laws. That, to me, just indicates such a fundamental misunderstanding of the very fundamental ideas of the way that this country is supposed to run, the ideas of a Republican democracy. The federal government has no business, in the first place, telling people what to do within a given state. Interstate commerce, the Constitution says they can say some stuff about that. Intrastate commerce, absolutely not. And he's also forgotten, even more at a just more fundamental and basic level, where does the power of Congress come from? Who gives them power? Last I checked, it was the consent of the governed. It's the people who get to make those decisions. The people in Colorado and Washington, Alaska and California, they're all saying that they want marijuana legalized. They have taken a vote to that effect. There were a national referendum today. I can pretty close to guarantee that it would pass. The fact that Congress has not yet changed that is not some excuse for the federal government to go in there and meddle with the affairs of the state government. What I think is, you know, all that military equipment that the sort of army surplus military tanks that the federal government has been giving to state police departments? I think that this is the time for states to use them. I believe that your state, if you live in Colorado, you live in California, you live in Washington, or any of the other states that have completely legalized recreational marijuana. If you have a store that sells recreational marijuana, then you should have every expectation that the police that you pay for will protect you from any threat. If anybody comes in and tries to steal your supply, if anyone comes in and tries to steal your stuff, it is the job of the police to protect you from that. And thanks to the federal government, guess what? They have the weapons to do it. They have big, huge tanks. They have all kinds of artillery right now. In the past, they were using that artillery to terrorize grandmothers at 3 a.m. with those, you know, SWAT team raids on marijuana where half the time they'd get the wrong house. That's what they were doing with in the past, and that's kind of a cowardly way to use military equipment. But a good way to use military equipment is if a federal military comes into your state trying to take your stuff, that's what it's for. And I encourage all you guys who live in Colorado, live in California, and all those places, to let your police department know that you expect to be protected by them against the federal government. You have authorized them to carry weapons to protect you. Now let's have them protect you. And if they will not protect you, if they refuse, well, then in my opinion, that's what the Second Amendment is for. The Second Amendment is for use when the government violates the Constitution, oversteps the laws of the land, oversteps the laws of the state, oversteps common law and common decency. That's what the Second Amendment is for. It's not just so you can go hunting deer. Hell, deer just not that important. Your livelihood, your right to property is that important. Now, if you want to also hunt deer, of course, I believe you have the right to do that. But again, that is not what it's for. It's for this. Now, if we had a president for the last 4 years that had any backbone, things would have already been different. You know, he used all kinds of blunt force executive power when he could use it to grow government, like for Obamacare. But when the DEA was refusing to reclassify marijuana, change the schedule to make it no longer Schedule 1, when the DEA was adding new things onto the schedule, onto Schedule 1, he didn't do anything about it. He could have. He just said he's not going to. Not that he can't. Alex Cagle right now is asking, what do libertarians think about Chelsea Manning getting a reduced sentence? Chelsea Manning, for those of you guys who don't know, one of the people who gave information to Julian Assange for WikiLeaks, brought so much light to some of the just horrific things that the U.S. military was doing, some of the errors, some of the just unbelievable things. And she was in jail. She had a 35-year sentence. And that sentence was finally commuted. She's been in jail for almost 7 years. For being a hero. The way that we treat heroes, whistleblowers, is jailing them. So what do I think about that? I think it's the right thing to do. I think that she should have been in jail for 0 seconds, that she should have been given a medal instead. You know, you saw Obama pinning the Congressional Medal of Freedom on Biden. I don't know, maybe Biden did something to deserve it. I have no idea. I mean, honestly, until the day after the election, I hadn't heard a single thing about Biden for the last 8 years. Maybe he's really good at working behind the scenes. I have no idea. But if you can give one Congressional Medal of Freedom, you can probably give a couple more. You know who else I would give a medal to? Edward Snowden, no question. Julian Assange, without any question. That's what heroism looks like. Heroism looks like you face these big, huge, terrible odds. You face this monster of whether it's the NIA or you know, people who are corrupt inside of the military. You face that monster, you fight it. And against all odds, you somehow win. That's heroism. That's the kind of stuff that deserves a medal. That's what medals are for. And that's the key thing that I want to see change. That's the thing. That's what I was so impressed by during Gary Johnson's campaign, is that he pledged that he was going to go to the steps of pardoning Edward Snowden. Who else would be on my list? Ross Ulbricht. This is a guy who was the founder of Silk Road. Amazing entrepreneur, brilliant technological mind. He came up with this, it's kind of like a next level eBay that allowed people to do all kinds of transactions. Now a lot of people sold drugs on it. And it's safe to say that the government didn't like that. Now here's the interesting thing. He didn't sell drugs on it. Not that it should make any difference, because I think he would have every right to sell as many drugs as he wants to. But just for your own, just to add, I'll put the icing on the cake, he didn't even sell any drugs himself. He just set up a cool website that allowed people to do all kinds of things. Many of them sold drugs. He said because he ran the website, because he set up the website, because he created this brilliant technology, guess what happened? They arrested him. They found him. They arrested him. They gave him life in prison. He's in prison for life. And if you're talking about, you know, people are like, well, where are all the jobs? You keep putting the job creators in prison. Of course, there's not going to be any jobs. This is a guy that's a brilliant technological mind. That's not going to be his last tech idea. Well, maybe it is now because you've locked him up. But this is somebody who could be creating thousands of new jobs. I mean, this is a guy like Zuckerberg, like Gates. I mean, this is a top-tier technological innovator. And they've locked him up. That's unconscionable. Especially because he didn't do anything to hurt anybody. Not only did he not do anything wrong by my standards, and I think that anybody should be able to sell anything to anybody that they want. Not only did he not do anything wrong really by my standards, didn't really do anything wrong by people who are all about drug standards. He didn't even sell any drugs. He didn't use any drugs. So what do I think about Chelsea Manning getting a reduced sentence? It's a nice step. Could have happened a few years earlier, but, you know, better late than never. But it seems like we're leaving a lot of people out who really need pardons. And if I added another person to that list, you know who else that would be? The 200,000 people right now in jail for victimless drug crimes. I would pardon every single one of them. I would pardon absolutely every one of them. Have them rejoin their family. Rejoin their families. Have them rejoin society. Have them do something productive. Have them use their knowledge and talents and interests for something useful. Not just have those people rotting in a cage, because that is – there's no justification for that. Now, I know a lot of you guys are thinking, man, what can I do? You can run for high office. You can run for governor, you can run for president, and you're thinking right now, man, there's no chance. How am I gonna get elected governor? You don't have to get elected. If you run for governor and talk about pardoning drug users enough, it'll put pressure on the people the person who might end up winning. And also, you never know what happens in an election. You never know who has some personal issue. You never know who has some weird political stance that people can't get behind. You never know. If you're just there, you might be the person who can get up there in that governor's mansion, take out your governor's pen, and sign blanket pardons for people who are there for just marijuana use. And again, that's not something only libertarians can do. Anybody can do that. Anybody can be pressured to do that. Some people do it from their own morality. The governor of Vermont is working to do that right now, working to pardon all these folks. He has the courage that Obama didn't have at the national level. Now, if you're one of those people who thinks that, you know what, I might not be a political science major, I might not be a lawyer, but I have courage. I have moral courage. I know how to do the right thing. I know the difference between right and wrong. Well, then please do go to lp.org, see how to get involved. Get involved in an existing campaign or run for office, even better. Right now you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Tune in each week for Monica Phillips and powerful conversations. This is a thought-provoking show for business people, leaders, and entrepreneurs. We'll feature today's thought leaders and industry trendsetters from across several locations and industries. Give yourself permission to be inspired and live a fulfilling life. Be sure to listen to Powerful Conversations live every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Where are you getting your advice on buying, selling, or maintaining your most important asset, your home? Is it from a reality show on cable TV, a comparison website, or are you just flying by the seat of your pants and gut instinct? Stop now before you make another move. Tune into Real Estate Today with host and realtor Deb Tomorrow. You can't afford to play guesswork when it comes to your new or existing home. Listen every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Are you or someone you know interested in attending college? With both college tuition and college enrollment up 60% since 2002, there is a lot of competition, and careful planning needs to be a part of the process. Tune in to Getting In, a College Coach Conversation, hosted by Elizabeth Heaton and featuring a team of college coach experts. We'll bring you the tips, techniques, and know-how to navigate the road to college and do so the smart way. Listen live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Follow us on Twitter at Voice America TRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's Voice America TRN.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments at lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. Now, just a few days ago, so many high school seniors submitted their final applications to college. Now, a lot of you guys are thinking, oh my God, I've finally gotten this huge weight off my shoulders and now everything's great and guaranteed. But if you speak to recent college graduates, what are they finding? They're finding that they're not getting the jobs that they want. Sometimes they're not getting any jobs at all. They, you know, either their parents paid all this money or they borrowed all this money, took on all this debt to get these jobs, to get this education. They're not even getting the jobs that they want. And there's a reason. I mean, this is not just something that randomly started happening. There is a reason for this. Now, there's two parts that we need to think about. The first part is the expense. If you spend $5,000 on an education and then you don't get a great job after it, I mean, you know, whatever. Maybe you learned, made some good friends, you got some experiences. It's you know, I could see that. But if you spend $200,000 in education and you're not getting a job, well, then you have to be seriously wondering what in the possible earth is going on. The first thing I want to talk about is how is it so expensive? I mean, why? What possible ridiculous logic is college this expensive? Imagine if we did things differently. Right now, anybody can get any loan for any amount for any college, no questions asked. But what imagine if we did things differently? Imagine if the government was not involved at all. Imagine if we just didn't even have a government. There's no government at all. Colleges still want people to come in to those colleges. They can do two things. One, the colleges themselves can provide the loans. Many colleges provide some loan assistance. But the colleges themselves could provide the entire loan. So instead of borrowing the money from Wells Fargo, you would borrow the money from Harvard. It's not unreasonable. Harvard has an endowment that's pretty much on the scale of a very, very large bank. I mean, college is big business, and colleges have a lot of money. So one is Harvard could be the one who gives the loan. Guess what that does? That gives them an incentive. Think about it. If Harvard is giving the loans, then Harvard benefits if you can pay that loan back. If you took the loan from them, then they want you to get a job that makes sense. What does that mean? It means they're going to be pushing you in directions where you might actually get some kind of a job. It means they're going to be investing all they can in their education. Right now, they are not. Most Ivy League colleges or most regular colleges, education is an afterthought. Undergraduate education, they don't care about it. Research is their focus. You know why? Because if a student defaults on the loan, the college does not suffer. Taxpayers suffer, you suffer, I suffer, but the college that did not give the education doesn't suffer. So that would be one solution. One solution is just let colleges could just give their own loans. The other nice thing about that, by the way, is colleges might not necessarily want to lend out $200,000 to an 18-year-old. They might instead find ways to reduce the cost and reduce the tuition. They might say, all right, $200,000, that's kind of a high financial risk. What if we lower it down a bit? It's good for the college. It's good for the students. That's one way. And look at the results. Colleges are forced to give better education. Students pay less money. It's a win-win. Here's another way we could do it. Right now, a lot of times people have great ideas for small businesses, amazing ideas, but they just don't have a lot of money. Sometimes they don't even need a lot of money. Sometimes they need just a few thousand dollars, maybe even a few hundred dollars. They just don't have it, but they have an amazing idea. So what happens? They go to the bank and they say, here's my idea. I would like to take out a small business loan. Here's my plan. Here's how I'm going to make the money. Here's how I'm going to pay it back. The bank officer looks at the plan, reviews it, and says, yeah, you know what? This is a pretty good idea. Or, no, this idea is really, really dumb. And based on the bank's experience, they either choose to invest in the idea by giving the loan or not to. And that person can go to as many banks as he wants. Sometimes one bank will say no, but another one will say yes. And many small businesses do exactly that. They borrow a small amount of money, they get started, and they move forward. What if college tuition was the same way? What if college loans were the same way? There's no government backing. There's none of that. See, right now, because government guarantees the loan, you know, banks have an incentive to make as many loans, as many irresponsible loans as they can. They don't suffer if it's bad. They don't suffer if the person doesn't pay it back ever. Taxpayers suffer. They don't suffer. But what if we said, listen, if you think that this student can pay the money back, then you're allowed to make the loan. And if not, don't make the loan. Now a bank is going to say, all right, well, let's talk. What are you planning to study? How are you planning to get a job that's going to make you enough money to pay this loan back? What are your grades like? Are you a straight D student? Have you worked ever? Have you had some kind of a job where you've shown your responsibility? You see, if you let banks make some of these investment decisions, that does two things. One, it makes students really think about it. Now, I've talked to so many students who took on these big loans and they regretted it because they hadn't really thought it through. They were just like, oh yeah, college, what you're supposed to do next. They hadn't thought about things like the actuarial exam, foreign service exam, LEED certification exams, IT exams. They hadn't thought about the alternatives to college at all. They thought that there were no alternatives to college. They thought the choice was between college and homelessness. And if those are your two choices, honestly, college is the better choice. But if you have to go through this process, if you have to actually think about all the alternatives, what's that going to do? A, it's going to make sure that people are making better decisions. B, it's going to make sure the debt's not that high. And C, guess what? A lot of people aren't going to get $200,000 loans. Most 18-year-olds would not get a $200,000 small business loan. That's a fact. Now, let's say the average 18-year-old can get a $20,000 loan. Guess what's going to happen? Some colleges won't change their tuition at all. Colleges like, you know, some colleges might be able to get away with it. Maybe Harvard can get away with that. I have no idea. But most colleges are going to have to lower tuition to the amount corresponding to the loan that most people can get. They're not going to be able to say, listen, if you want 4 years of college here, it's going to be $250,000 because no 18-year-old can get that kind of a loan. Instead, they're going to have to find ways to give lower cost education. That means they can't charge all this extra money and use it to fund dumbass research and all kinds of nonsense. They're going to have to use that money to make better education that's cost effective and cost efficient. Instead of fleecing people all the time, there's going to be somebody holding the strings. Somebody who, with financial experience, banks, you know what they have? Financial experience. 18-year-olds, not as much. Someone with financial experience saying, all right, realistically, you spending $200,000 on this degree and this topic, we don't see it's going to work. We can give you a loan for $12,000. This means that colleges are going to have to compete on price. They're going to have to find ways to lower cost. And if they put that energy, the same energy into lowering costs they put into raising costs, you know that over the last decades, college tuition has been going up at 3 times the rate of inflation. If they put all that energy into reducing rather than increasing costs, they're going to find a way to do it. Who benefits from that? Students certainly benefit from that because they have to pay lower tuitions and colleges actually have to provide good education. Taxpayers benefit from that a lot because we don't have to keep bailing out student loans. A lot of times, shockingly enough, when 18-year-olds make decisions and major in something that doesn't have any real market value, they can't pay back that $200,000 loan with interest. So who pays it? You and I pay it. Taxpayers pay it. We all benefit from that. And if you want to get the government out of education, get the government out of secondary education, lower college tuitions, make college affordable, make people make responsible and beneficial decisions, please go to lp.org. Get involved in the campaign or run for office yourself. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm your host, Arvin Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvin Vora again next Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.